I know there's been some bad feelings between us lately. I thought this might help us get over it. I'm over it. Can I join you?
Absolutely.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, and it is Melrose Place, and it is Season 5, Episode 12, Quest for Mother. Okay, now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes, Dave.
Is that like a play on something?
I assumed Quest for Fire.
Okay.
I don't know what else it would be.
Usually that kind of thing rhymes or...
Yes. Has,
yeah.
Well...
Or is it supposed to be Quest for Mother?
Look, it's not I Am Curious Melrose, and I think we could all be grateful for that. Speaking of things we're grateful for, our Patreon supporters, and they will be hearing on May 27th, let's watch Luke Perry and Jason Priestley in Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. That is Again With This, episode 97... There's a huge archive. If you guys haven't joined the Patreon yet, you really should. We have a pretty wild time. Mm-hmm. This is season one, episode 4 of Jeremiah and the Ground Sown with Salt. That is on Daily Motion. We will link it in the show notes, and we hope that you will sign up and join us to watch that and hear what we thought.
Yes, patreon.com/againwiththis. Join us there. We hope to see you. For now, let's talk about... Quest for Mother. Starting with our D plot, Jane finds her biological mother. Well, I guess we're done. We start here with Jane meeting a Joe Curtis at a senior citizen's home. He produced one of Sherry's movies, so Jane got his info through the Film Academy, just FYI. He offers to make some phone calls to try and track Sherry down, joking as Jane leaves after less than 2.5 minutes that if it works out, he gets the film rights. Jane, fucking stay and chat with this twinkly old man. Meeting you has obviously made his week. She's like so quick to get out of there. She's just being rude all the time in this plotline. It must be said again.
Yeah.
When Jane returns to the courtyard, Sydney is on her, bitching that Jane was out of pocket on Sam's day off. Jane apologizes, lying that she was stuck with the supplier all day and now she's too tired to talk. So Sydney takes advantage of Jane's distraction to say she gave herself a raise, but Jane doesn't even seem to hear it. And she plays a message from Sherry, volunteering to meet her for lunch the next day. And Jane's so excited, she immediately plays the message again, looking entranced. But before Sherry can arrive on the day, Sydney sidles into the restaurant and sits at Jane's table. She's just there to make sure Jane is okay. Jane is, in fact, a bitch. Clip two.
Where is she? Don't tell me your so-called mother's a no-show.
She'll be here.
Maybe. But I think you could use some sisterly support either way.
Sydney, we're not really sisters.
Jane, we have been together my whole life. You taught me how to bake Toll House cookies. You used to pinch me under the table. I got all your hand-me-down clothes. We used to have crushes on the same boys. We're really sisters.
I'd like you to be gone before she gets here.
Jane, wake up. The woman left you. She's not coming back.
Excuse me, Miss Mancini?
Yeah.
Sherry Doucette just called with apologies. She got tied up at the studio. But she asked if you'd please come to her home in Brentwood tomorrow at 4. Here's the address.
Thank you. You were saying?
Ooh.
Yeah, really. Shut up, Jane.
Yeah, shut up, Jane. For real. So then we're seeing Jane park in front of the mansion in Brentwood. Sherry opens the door. As previously noted, she's friggin' Donna Mills from Knott's Landing, which was, despite what I said, that she was an Aaron Spelling diva in her headshot. Knott's Landing was not an Aaron Spelling show. But she did, in that headshot, which you can see the visual aids, look like she was from Charlie's Angels. Like, it was that, definitely that era of 70s glam. Anyway, by this point in the show, they've had multiple characters comment on the Sherry and Jane looking alike. And credit where it's due, they really do. It's the best mother-daughter casting since Gail Strickland and Laura Layton. Like,
yeah. Well, and Jane and Sydney don't not look alike.
True.
I mean, I always bought them as sisters. I didn't think it was bad casting.
Yeah, no.
But this is extremely good also.
Yeah. So, Apparently, Sherry also agrees they look alike after pleasantries are exchanged. This clip is long, but it lays out the whole situation. Clip 3.
You're so beautiful. Would you like something? Some tea?
Sure. Tea is good. Anything really. Tea is fine.
It's wonderful to see you looking so well. I'm happy.
What about you?
Oh, I keep busy. Charity functions and, of course, keeping up with this place.
I bet you're a decorator. The house looks so lovely.
No. I leave that sort of thing to the professionals.
Gosh, I have so many questions. I don't know where to start.
Jane, I have a new life now. And I know this might hurt you to hear it, but I can't make you a part of it. I have my own family, and they don't know about you. They don't even know who I was when I had you. And I want to keep it that way.
Of course. I don't want to intrude. I just thought that, maybe I could see where I came from and who you are.
Jane, I gave you away for very complicated reasons. I couldn't even begin to explain everything that was involved.
It doesn't matter.
It does matter. It matters to me.
But can't we at least...
No. I'm sorry. And please don't try to contact me again.
I can find my wheel.
What?
Yeah.
Why is any of this?
Yes. She almost gets there. You can sort of hear her, but she's just not as good as Laura Layton with the crying.
Yeah. I mean, she is actually, she's pretty affecting, although the way she's been behaving in this plot line to this point makes it, like, inadvertently on the show's part, satisfying for her to get dropkicked by Donna Mills. But
yes.
It's also like, Donna Mills, what are you fucking doing? Like, if you don't want to cross the streams, ignore the calls and messages.
Right.
Don't agree to meet her. Mm-hmm. Make it clear you don't want this.
Right.
Don't let her get seated with tea and then be like, so the thing is, fuck off. Like, what? Right. And later events do not do much to clarify why this was necessary. But anyway.
Not really. Yeah. This meeting could have been an email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know, because it was the past, a phone call. Mm-hmm. Like, the message you could have left her could have been, I heard from Joe, no thank you.
Yeah.
So, some number of days later, Jane does exactly the thing Sherry asked her not to do by coming to the house where the door is opened by a teenager. Jane asks for his mom, but she hasn't been there for the past 2 years.
You know, yeah, you have to pay up now, though. $1,500, that's a big chunk of change to come up with.
Even the soundboard is over it with this shit.
Would you like me to resume? Perhaps, Dave? Okay. Jane asks for the kid's mom, but she hasn't been there for the past 2 years. His parents are divorced. And Jane is like, but I just met Sherry here yesterday. Turns out Sherry's the kid's dad's secretary. She house sits when they're out of town. Jane asks if he knows Sherry's address. And the kid does zero due diligence on who Jane even is before taking off to get her the info. Like, he just says, who are you? And Jane says, it's personal. And he's like, okay. Nice. So Jane uses that to show up uninvited and unannounced at Sherry's perfectly respectable apartment that I think we're supposed to think is really pathetic
because
her
dump,
fridge
yeah.
is kind of short. Like, she's one person. She doesn't need a huge fridge. Anyway, when Sherry declines Jane's request to come in, Jane just shoves past her and because she just wants to talk. Clip 4.
I don't know what to say to you. I don't even
get
know
out.
You.
But I want to know you.
Really? This is it. This is me.
This is me. did you have to come here? To see who you are. I don't care where you live or if you're well off. I don't want you to have to pretend.
I can't handle this. I never thought I'd see you again.
Well, here I am.
Who cares?
Truly. Like, this is
sorry.
The last, this is the last scene of the episode, so it closes on them, like, holding hands. But who cares? It's exactly right.
Who cares?
Yeah. Moving on to our C-plot. Craig is at the center of multiple confrontations. Craig is businessing alone in the D&D conference room when Arthur appears in the doorway. The ominous score lets us know we should be concerned about this. And they bitch at each other about their recent plot developments before Craig starts with the threats. Clip 5.
You can't stop me from running the company, but you are going to stop from suing me.
You're going to stop from suing me.
Yeah.
Mr. Big Pants Shot Guy. What?
I don't know.
All right. Well, I have a follow-up question, but it belongs somewhere else. So let's proceed.
Okay. Craig goes on to express his willingness to go public with the damaging information he has on Arthur, something from their family history. Arthur immediately knows what he's referring to without Craig saying it and says that Craig is embroiled in whatever it was also. But Craig says he was just a little kid when it happened, whatever it is. And Arthur would do serious time for it, but Craig would not. Craig is willing to risk losing the agency over it and has waited his whole life to use this against Arthur. And when he dares Arthur to call his bluff, Arthur stalks out instead, and Craig scowls at him. And again, no one really cares about this either. Billy passes Arthur, leaving through the bullpen, and looks amused when Arthur ignores him, whereas I would have thought such things happen to Billy daily and are no longer noteworthy. Craig comes out after Arthur, and when Billy asks if he's okay, brags that everything in his life is going super great, including his girlfriend Sam and the loft that he got her downtown. And Sam is in said loft painting when Billy and his outgrown haircut, which you can see in the visual aids, show up uninvited at her door. She seems appropriately concerned about how he found the place. And he cheerfully says that Craig told him all about it. Okay, but did he give you the address? Like, downtown is not a, not a location on the map, like, specific enough for you to find her door.
He followed the smell of great art.
Fair enough.
As you do.
Cut to the shot of Colin with his hands full of brown paint and Kelly taking a big whiff.
Oh, God. Oh,
anyway,
Jesus.
Sam's like, well, come in, I guess. And he ignores her tone to do so because he has an agenda to get to, broadly hinting that Craig wouldn't do all this for her if he did not have certain sexpectations. That's me saying it, not him. It is a terrible joke, but it's still a joke beyond Billy's capacities. But anyway, Sam kicks him out.
Correct.
However, his undermining works, because the next time we see Sam, she is pulling Craig aside at work to complain that he's not returning her calls and insinuating to Billy that they're fucking. And Craig shrugs off the accusation as Billy making inferences from Craig's guy talk. Sam's appropriately disgusted by his confirmation that they have been talking about her behind her back. And Billy, coming upon them by chance, finds a nook to hide in and eavesdrop on them fighting about their relationships. Totally the wrong faces throughout this scene. Mm-hmm. Thank you. We both flagged this one for the visual aids, which you can see.
This is, oh, sweet, there's sheet cake in the break room face.
Yes. It's true.
Fuck, now I want sheet cake.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, same. Craig asks if he hasn't been a perfect gentleman to Sam so far, and she waits a long moment before very quietly saying, close, and then immediately she turns around and leaves. Okay. Sometime later, Amanda storms onto the court where Arthur is practicing with a tennis ball cannon and demands to know why he's not fighting Craig's takeover of D&D anymore. Arthur just decided Craig had more on the ball than he gave him credit for, and Amanda doesn't need to spy on him anymore. In fact, she should consider her position underneath Craig permanent. She clarifies that he's saying she's on her own, and he says that's her problem. But actually, she says it's his problem. I believe her more than him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a glare off as she leaves.
What do we think? What do we think the blackmail the thing is? Grounds it? I think it's that they killed Craig's mom.
Yes.
And Craig was like in the room.
Yes, I agree. Because there's okay. been, he's already made references to like, you have a problem with women.
Mm, yeah.
Like mom, right? And he's like, that was different or whatever he said. So yes,
so,
I agree.
So little Robert Durst over here. Okay, got it.
Over the loft later, Sam opens the door to Billy again, not looking friendly. He denies that he's checking up on her. He just felt bad about the last time he stopped by, but he is smirking so hard, again, wrong face, which you can see the visual aids, mm-hmm. that she can't possibly believe he feels anything but smug about it.
Mm.
Particularly when he elaborates on what he is sorry about. Clip six.
Being chauvinistic and politically incorrect and implying anything about anything, so I...
That covers a lot of ground.
Yeah, well, I think I missed a spot, so I want to keep shoveling.
It's just, you know, I've had it up to here with guys and their assumptions.
Well, I don't assume anything anymore. There's no percentage in it.
You see, that is such a guy concept. Treat a relationship like some sort of game of craps. Why can't you just be real?
Yeah, well, jealousy's real. Where'd that get me?
Back here.
Yeah. Nice sketch.
Yeah, I wish I could finish it, but the model canceled, and I can't quite get the twist in the torso. You know, if you could just stand over there for... No, never mind.
Wait, you want me to model? It's okay, I'm on my lunch hour. I want to help. You want my shirt off?
No. Yes, okay. If you don't mind, I mean, you can. Yeah.
Okay. The pants are going to stay on because I've had it up to here with women and their assumptions.
Touché.
Okay. This is so bad and boring. They have no chemistry. She usually isn't this bad, but he's like dragging her down to his level. It's awful.
It's true, but I feel like they could have gone to the just get Andrew Shue shirtless again well more than they did, because there's nothing wrong with his body that his dumb face can't ruin. Like, truly. Not to say his face is ugly, it's just... You know, what comes
it's
out of it is
the wrong
so
face for any scene he's in. Yeah.
Exactly.
Nope. Agreed.
Anyway, obviously you can see him shirtless in the visual aids as well. I'm only human. Some other day after this, Craig shows up to the loft with flowers. Sam is painting, weirdly perched on a stool that is too high, and the dumb director has her take the flowers, hold them in her lap with her left hand, and continue painting with the right, which you can see in the visual aids. It makes no sense. Like, it's not what a person would do.
I actually made a note on this, and it was like, this is the, doing an art blocking equivalent of when I am trying to drive with the fucking dog in the car, and he has a whole front seat and a back seat, and he's like, I will has a lap. And it's okay, fine. So, yeah, the flowers are bare.
Mm-hmm.
The paintbrush is the steering wheel. I don't know how I became Sam in any scenario, but anyway.
Got it.
It's just very dumb. I thought she was sitting like on a table, and she's sitting like with one knee up and then with the other folded. It just looks really uncomfortable, all
of it. Yeah. Anyway, surprising no one, Craig has come by to try to collect on his investment, but Sam is not having it. Clip seven.
Look, I know that I've been spending most of my time at work. I just thought that maybe we could go and see a movie and get a quick bite to eat.
Oh, I can't. I have to get up really early tomorrow.
Okay. Maybe we can stay up all night.
Not right now. I'm working.
Oh, come on.
Please, Craig.
Hey, I'm just trying to show a little affection. Is that such a crime?
No, it's not a crime. This is my studio, not your love nest. Don't you get it?
Yeah, I get that we're dating. We share experiences. We help each other out. It's a give-and-take situation.
Oh, okay, I get it. So you give me the loft so you can take what you want?
No, that's not it. Come back here, come on.
I think that is it, actually.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is it. And also, it is a crime if she says no, which she did like five different ways. So, And who wrote this dialogue?
Yeah.
This is like the fucking Smithers' screensaver of Mr. Burns. Like, it's just so clunky.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to our B-plot. Michael and Matt shake up their living arrangements. At a lawyer's office conference table, Kimberly sadly says the divorce is final as far as she is concerned. Her lawyer protests that there's community property, but Michael crabs that all he owns is debt because they heard you, Sarah. You brought that up in a previous episode recently. And Kimberly's welcome to take half of said debt. Kimberly's lawyer brings up the deed to the beach house, which prior to this point was always a rental, because that has been a plot point for sure.
Yep.
But now, suddenly, there are two mortgages on it and a lien against it, and Michael is practically bankrupt. Kimberly finds this news alarming, but Michael pouts that it shouldn't make any difference to her since she is leaving him, which, like, okay, yes, technically, but you're the one who got yourself a mistress, dude.
Yeah. Also, maybe don't give the mistress a checkbook.
Yeah.
Because what is she doing with it?
Great question. Well, she's waiting for him to put money in it, and which he will do as much as he can sometimes, which is all he promised. After making her retire, anyway, Megan, speaking of whom, improbably parks in front of the building. Parking cop is back. Hello. As Kimberly tells Michael they can start living their separate lives now. But Michael says he still loves Kimberly and they should just try to work this out. She snits that he has cheated on her for the last time, in which case Michael can't figure out why she isn't going after him harder on the division of property. But alimony would just remind her that Michael exists. And Megan watches Michael painfully absorb this blow before Kimberly gestures to her and tells him again to go on to his new life. And in the car, Megan says she loves him and Michael says it back very dismissively. Trouble in good old paradise for these two idiots. When we see Kimberly next, she's on the phone with a sales dude about getting some more life insurance, specifically to cover accidental death. Since she travels a lot, I think you might have a problem getting more life insurance when there is a brain tumor on your medical records.
There's a physical, but good luck.
Yeah.
Also, traveling to Northern California so that one of your alt personalities can take over a mental hospital is not really what they have in mind with these policies, I feel, but what I don't know is a lot. Insurance, 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 insurance. Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, I assume that the plan is get more insurance and then go cliff diving or something, but whatever. Michael bursts in on this unannounced and Kimberly quickly ends the call. Michael's just there to get some of his shit from the bathroom. And when Kimberly tells him to grab it and go back to Megan, who's probably, as she puts it, panting for his return, casually says he's actually staying with Matt for a while. Kimberly yells at him not to screw things up with Megan the way he has with every other woman we've ever seen him with. Michael doesn't understand her change in attitude, accusing her of having something going with this Tom guy she just hung up on. But she can't say who he is without blowing up her secret plans, and they part on bad terms. Over to Shooters, where Matt is working again for now, I guess. He pulls Allison aside to say that while things are going well with Dan, he makes so many demands on Matt's time that Matt is going to have to quit. So could she smooth things over on that with Jake? Which, like, do you mean the money or don't you? Like, did he give you a checkbook? What is going on with this arrangement? Just wondering. So then when Jake joins them, Matt the coward takes off before Allison can answer. And then when he's gone, Allison says he wanted to quit. She told him it was fine, which she actually didn't, but okay. Jake starts whining that he just gave Matt more hours. And why didn't Matt come to him about it anyway? And Allison bleats back that Matt was afraid Jake would yell at him. And Jake yells that he's not going to yell at him, but off her look, gets over himself. Over to the corner of the bar, where Matt is telling Dan about Michael staying with him and why. Dan is fine with that since Matt is hardly ever at home anyway. Matt figures he owes Michael the favor of introducing Matt to Dan, which, like, as his doctor at a rehab facility, not a blind date, but sure. If you want to repay him for anything, it should be cheating you into medical school, in my opinion. But shocking no one, Dan then suggests that Matt stay at his house for a while. And he's in the middle of saying Matt could even sublet his apartment to Michael when Matt cuts him off because he's not ready to give up his own place. Fortunately for them both, Jake interrupts. Clip 8.
I'm not going to yell at you. Okay? I just want to know where you get off quitting on me without giving me any notice.
That's what I was doing. I was giving notice.
Not to me, you weren't.
Wait a minute. He's not obligated to give notice for a minimum wage bar job.
Were you his lawyer?
No. No, I'm his lover. Oh. I don't see him get bullied.
You know, whoa, guys. Dan. Jake, Dan, truce.
I'll be out in the car.
Well, Dan's a pretty take-charge guy, huh?
Just looking out for my interests.
Right. As long as yours don't cross his.
Yeah, also, hey, fucknuts, don't talk to your boyfriend's boss like that. He does still work there.
Yeah.
Also, what is wrong with you? Anyway.
Also, I don't think you're obligated to give that much notice at a minimum wage job, as he very dismissively puts it. But, like, Jake is his friend, and he did him a favor by giving him the job in the first place. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's called courtesy?
Yeah. I mean, whatever. Like, it's the food service industry. People just don't show up all the time.
Sure.
It's fine. But, like, here again, we get it. You have established that Dan is controlling. Let's amp up the controlling and get to the point.
Yeah. Although, that said, I mean, it's a very insightful snap judgment on Dan for A, anyone to make based on that exchange, and B, for Jake to make about anyone. Like, this is not Jake's specialty, really.
No.
That said, next time we see Dan, he is proving Jake absolutely right. Clip 9.
What is it? Is there something wrong? Is there an emergency?
No, nothing wrong. I was just thinking about our talk at Shooters. You quitting and about Michael moving into your place.
You got me out of rounds for this?
Hey, I want you to be with me. Okay, I want you to move into my place for good.
What?
This is the perfect time.
Wait, you know, it's just, I don't know. Moving out of my apartment and everything.
Hey, listen, don't be cautious now.
Okay, Dan.
This is not a... Come on, this is not something that I take lightly.
Right, no. Okay? It's just, I don't know. It's a big step.
I've got a lot of colleagues and friends. Some of them very close. But nobody makes me feel, nobody has ever made me feel the way you do. I mean, when the house, when you're in it, the house comes to life. When you're away, it's just my small, little, lonely, little world. And when I just look at you, I just... make me smile. I love you. And I want you to be with me.
All right, I will.
Buddy.
Hey, first of all, Fielding, didn't you do a psych rotation?
Honestly,
is coercive control. Figure it out.
That's right.
Second of all, hey, Dr. Dan, he's a med student. You're better off just like shoving him into a utility closet for a quickie at the hospital because he's never going to fucking be home.
Yeah.
Third of all, ugh, gross. Poor Matt. Can't Matt be happy?
Well, fourth of all, the way they celebrate this agreement is with the traditional physical affection, which is one hug. One very warm hug. Like, not that I'm expecting them to necessarily make out in the hallway at the hospital, but, like, not even a peck. Goddamn.
Seriously.
So then Michael returns to the courtyard with his luggage, right on the heels of a fight between Amanda and Peter, which we will get to. Michael cheerfully comments that things haven't changed much around there and lets himself in at Matt's. And is startled to see Megan coming out from the bedroom in her underwear and a robe. She went looking for Michael at the hospital, and Matt gave her the key. Michael is still hoping on some level to reunite with Kimberly, so he is visibly trying to stop himself getting horny for Megan and her partial nudity right there in front of him, but also visibly failing, which you can see in the visual aids. Megan doesn't care if Michael lives with her or not. She will fuck him wherever he wants, and it turns out he wants to fuck her right here and now, so that's handy for both of them.
As it were.
As it were. Let's close things up with our A plot. Peter and Sydney get further entangled with the McBrides. Ugh. For work, it takes Amanda glaring at him from the hall to get Peter off his ass to answer the ringing phone. She can tell from his reaction that it's bad news, and he confirms that he did not get the chief of staff job, although his disappointment might also be the very ugly t-shirt she is wearing in the scene, which you can see in the visual aids. Oof. Really not Amanda-y. It's like an Oliver print wallpaper look. Anyway, she is outraged on his behalf, saying one little surgical freakout doesn't mean he can't be a good administrator, which turns out to be the wrong thing to say. Clip 10.
You don't get it, do you? I trained for 15 years to become a surgeon. It's what I do. And when I can't do it, it's a very big deal. It sort of affects my life. And no one is going to make me administrative chief if I can't cut it in the operating room, okay?
As it were.
Get it, huh? Who wants to be a paper pusher anyway?
So, what are you gonna do?
Going golfing! Figure I ought to give myself a little free time.
All things considered, isn't that a little frivolous?
It's therapeutic, actually. I mean, if someone were to come into my office with my problems, this is exactly what I would prescribe.
Well, I've always heard that a doctor who treats himself has a fool for a patient.
Well, thanks for all the support.
Not a slam, okay. Just a gentle closing. Very mature.
When you first got here, you were a paper pusher.
Yeah.
That was the role. And can't you just go back to basically unlicensed psychiatry like you were performing on Kimberly? Like, you have so many options. This is soap opera.
Yeah. This is also, I mean, I'm sure the golf people, if any are listening, are going to tell me why you can't do this. But like, why schlep your golf clubs up and down those stairs and put them in one of the probably two closets that this apartment has? Just leave them in your trunk.
Leave them at the club. If you're a member at the club, you just leave them at the club.
Oh, okay. See? I didn't even know that. Anyway, on his way through the courtyard, Taylor chirps at Peter that their friendship now has Kyle's full consent. Peter counters that Kyle threatened him the night before, so no thank you. Taylor has zero concern about this and insists that they can be friends, but Peter would just like to be his own friend right now. Taylor gets it, but if he needs another one, he should call. And that night, the McBrides return home arguing about whether she should be entitled to take off a couple of nights a week from the restaurant and conveniently stop outside the door so that Sydney can stand by her window and eavesdrop as Kyle backs down. He just hopes he can find a good part-time hostess on short notice.
In L.A.? That'll take weeks!
When you live next door to someone who's already done that on a volunteer basis? The next morning, Amanda clears her throat in Peter's ear to wake him up so she can ask where he was the night before. He left her a message that he would be late, but when she went to bed at 1, he still wasn't home. So he shoves some checks at her. Checks, by the way, really turning into the best supporting actors of the season. turns out he won $1,000 playing golf and another $200 playing gin. Again, the storyline. Come on now.
Gin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Peter thinks this is evidence of his life getting back on track, but Amanda doesn't think one good day's gambling really means anything. He tells her not to minimize it. He wants to celebrate with dinner at Kyle's. She makes a face, but agrees. And the next time we see Kyle, he's at Kyle's, wrapping up a hostess interview before Sydney strolls in and announces that she will do it. She can totally handle it, both professionally and in terms of getting past their cheaty shit, in which case she can start the next night. And over dinner at Kyle's the same night, Amanda is telling Peter he doesn't have to stay a surgeon. He could do research, which, like, yeah, he really seems like the meticulous type that research would be suited for, sure. Peter considers this for about 1 second before saying this, clip 11.
You know, I actually thought about becoming a golf pro at one time. Oh. It was right before med school. It's always been kind of a, I don't know, fantasy of mine. Maybe I'll look into it a little more carefully.
You are joking, right? I mean, you wouldn't give up medicine for golf.
Well, I don't know. I mean, look at me. Look how my self-confidence has come back just a few days out playing like that, huh? It felt great playing golf. It felt great winning again. Hey, I think you got your old Peter back, baby.
Is everything okay? Oh, this was dinner for two, wasn't it? Just trying to be of service. But please, if you need anything else, just ask someone else.
You're not nearly as good at this, creep.
No.
Take a seat.
Not your bag. Taylor storms over to Kyle and orders him to take over before she spills soup in Amanda's lap. And he does, topping up their wine and asking what they're celebrating. Amanda, sounding a lot friendlier than the last time she and Kyle chatted at D&D when she yelled at him about Taylor, tells him about the golf. And to Kyle's curious questions, Peter says he plays at Glen Oaks and that Kyle should try it sometime. Notably, not an invitation. Just, that is the location. You should go there. Then Peter's beeper goes off. Amanda is grateful that the hospital is calling Peter back to the real world. But when Peter goes to the payphone, Taylor cuts off his dialing. It is she who beeped him. Clip 12.
Why?
You know what tomorrow is, don't you?
No, I don't.
It's the anniversary of my sister's death.
Crazy smile.
Taylor, you don't understand. I have tried for so long to put that behind me. It just hurts me too much to remember.
Well, it's too painful for me to forget.
Crazy smile.
You'll probably think this is weird, but I have this little ritual that I do every year. I find a church and I light a candle for Beth. It would mean a lot to me if you were with me tomorrow when I went.
No, I couldn't.
It's not like I'm religious or anything. I mean, I just figure I should spread my prayers around, you know? You never know who's listening, right?
Is that what we're calling it?
So if we could just share our memory this once. That's not too much to ask, is it?
No. All right, but meet me at St. Andrew's Chapel tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and we'll light a candle for Beth together.
All right, thanks. See you tomorrow.
Wrong tone, wrong face. That face is also wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about this is wrong. I understand that it's a secret now and blah, blah, blah. So that's why he's probably going along with it. But like, he clearly sees now that she is a kook balloon floating to heaven. So.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
And also, why is this taking so long? It's like episode 71. Please put whatever it is in motion so that she can get shoved in the pool and we can move on. I do not care.
Before we move on from this scene, though, we have not really worked this in yet, but as many people who were reading entertainment news in the 90s will recall, Lisa Rinna was not the first choice to play this part. It was going to have been Hunter Tylo, who was on The Bold and the Beautiful at the time, playing a character who was also named Taylor. Interesting side note. But then she got pregnant. The show fired her. She sued Aaron Spelling, and it became a whole thing, particularly after Heather Locklear got pregnant this season after the firing, and it did not lose her job over it. But on Hunter Tylo's Wikipedia, career is 2 and lawsuit is 2.1. There is no 2.2, so it was not great for her personally, but it did establish precedent for actors' right to maintain their privacy and, you know, like, not get canned for getting pregnant. Career aside, it seems like she's had a lot of tragedy in her life with her partners and her kids. Bold and the Beautiful hired her back right after Melrose fired her, so she played that character, the other Taylor, from 1990 to 2019. They wanted her back last year, but she declined, so they recast the role with Krista Allen last fall. And not long after that, Tylo admitted to having had an affair in the mid-aughts with Ronan Moss, Sarah, who had played her characters
Baby, come
on
back.
He played her characters on enough love interest, Ridge, on B&B. So I think you know his work. Are you familiar with hers?
Yes, I watched Bold and the Beautiful in the 90s when I was in college. We often were fashionably late to 1:45 classes because Bold started at 1:30.
Okay.
Had basically 90 seconds of plot, ended at 2, and then we would sprint wherever we had to go. But yeah, she, we remember that we remember her from that. And then when she was supposed to come onto Melrose, that was like, you know, college watch streams crossing in the mm-hmm. best possible way.
Yeah.
And that was like a big scandal that she was like, oh, I'm pregnant. And then they were like, bye. And then mm-hmm. she was back on Bold. But
right.
Yeah, I had forgotten that affair thing. Apparently, the scuttlebutt was also that she was considered difficult because she was assertively Jesus-y. I don't know if that was part of it or if that's true.
Right.
Or if that's like, you know, actionable under OSHA law. Like,
sure.
Whatever. Like, I worked in a union shop once where we would find like Jehovah's Witness pamphlets on our seats. And it's like, you know what? Like, everybody just calm down. But yeah, Ron Moss has been in my thoughts quite a bit lately since he was the bass player for Player and the Markets Here Talk About Songs. America's Damn 40 season is in full swing and Player is doing extremely well on our charts. So yeah, Ron has high cheese levels across his resume and I respect it.
So how do you think Tylo would have been in this part? Do you think it would have been better than Rinna?
Yes, because I think Tylo understands the assignment a lot better.
Yeah.
Because she's been doing daytime drama. And Tylo's good.
Yeah.
She was good at what she did. And I think she would have been a little less non-credibly, like, I think she would have been able to hold the creepiness in check a little more, because Rinna's problem is that that's the only note of the performance, and you don't understand why everyone doesn't just change the locks and stop making eye contact with her, because she's got the Manson lamps.
Right.
It's a problem.
Yeah. I feel like what she is missing in the performance is vulnerability, because she just seems like she's in charge all the time. And so that makes it harder to buy, like, how Peter is supposed to be reacting to her, whether it's like, oh, she's crazy, she could do anything, versus she's sad, I need to be nice to her. Because, I mean, it's partly that the writing is all over the map as well, but...
True. And there's also, like, she is not, I think you're absolutely right about the vulnerability. She is not giving you little sister who is not used to being out of that role. And, like, you can't not know that this is an individual who is married to Harry fucking Hamlin. So there's a certain amount of insecurity that you're just not, marking her down for credit-wise. Because it's like, like, she can, you know, get anything she wants and did.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Indeed. So back to this
He's
reality.
He's still cute. Good for him.
It's true. He really is. So then Kyle happens to find Peter on the golf course the next very overcast morning. He knows there have been bad feelings between them lately and hope playing around might help them get over it. And Peter shrugs that he is over it, but agrees to let Kyle join him. And he doesn't seem to really buy it when Kyle pretends not to know how to play, asking his handicap. But Kyle, the obvious hustler, says it's been so long since he played, he doesn't even remember. Peters is 5 on a good day, Sarah? Opinion?
I mean, I think that's about Jack Wagner's is probably, he's a scratch golfer, I would say. So yeah. I think they just made it a 5 in case he, but then he steps up to the tee and I was like, ooh, hooked it. I mean, I played just enough golf back in the mists of time to know that I am fucking terrible at it and should not attempt it again. I do enjoy driving the carts. but the outfits are a nightmare, and Mark Twain was right. It's a good walk ruined. So, yeah, I 5 is for a doctor in Beverly Hills area. That's about what you hope for.
Sure.
Jack Wagner is probably a little better than that.
Okay. It does seem like golf would be the kind of thing where it would be fun to, like, ride in the cart and, like, drink a beer, but I guess they don't let you just do that and hang out. You have to actually participate.
Yeah. I mean, if you are with other people who are participating, it is possible to do that. And then you just offer to drink and drive, I heard, and that's really wrong. Yeah. Never do what I do.
Yeah. Don't drink when you're driving a boat either, for sure.
No.
So Kyle suggests basically betting on it. He says, even up then, I assume that's what that means. Then Peter, as Sarah says, hooks it. Kyle looks smug. I mean, I'm asking questions because I want to understand, but that aside, I cannot tell you how much I don't care about this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so, again, the only sort of thing of interest, which we already clocked, so we can just step smartly along, is that Jack Wagner's agent is earning his or her percentage.
Indeed. So when we rejoin them post-match, very sore loser Peter is asking if a check is okay to pay Kyle, and Kyle is pretending it's no big deal, but really lording it over him. Clip 13.
You know, yeah, you have to pay him now, though. $1,500, that's a big chunk of change to come up with. I know your practice is just getting back on its feet.
There's nothing wrong with my practice.
Okay. Yeah, we need to do this again sometime. Too bad you had to go double or nothing on those last three holes.
Oh, Kyle, you son of a bitch.
I mean, it's pretty clear to me that some of this smugness is actually possibly relief on Rob Estes' part for not, like, being shown trying to, you know, do a golf.
That's true. He's not.
But there is one shot, and it's in the visual aids. Like, it's just such a pleaty situation, and it is that era of the 90s where men's sport shirts and polo shirts, like, the sleeves just came down. They were, like, three-quarter sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, Jackie O, what is happening here? It's just the unsexiest shit on earth.
It's not good. So Peter's mood does not seem to have improved between that morning and, in the very next scene, the candle lighting for Beth in the random church that Taylor has picked out. She thinks Beth would be happy that the three of them are together again, like in the old days, even though we had been given to understand that Taylor was away at boarding school and Peter barely knew her then at all, to the degree that he did not recognize her any of the 50 times he met her before she said who she was.
Yeah, and when she was, like, staring at him from a ficus in the courtyard, like, yeah. Jesus show.
So it seems like a past life to Peter now, but Taylor's always thinking about how things would be different if Beth had lived. Another long clip. Clip 14.
How my world wouldn't have tilted and you wouldn't have left. And I wouldn't have had to cover for you.
What do you mean?
It was me, Peter. I'm the one who put the fake entry into Beth's diary to make it look like a suicide because I knew it was you who gave her the lethal injection. I know Beth would have wanted me to do that because she loved you so much. And we couldn't let you go to jail. I wanted you to come back for me, too.
But why didn't you tell me this weeks ago? What is this, blackmail?
No. I didn't tell you because I care about you and I wanted to spare you those memories.
Well, then why tell me now?
Well, I didn't want to, but because this day, how could I not tell you?
Taylor, you can't keep bringing me back into the past. Don't you understand? This hurts me.
No, no, please. I could never hurt you. You were so special to me back then. You protected me. All I ever wanted was to live with you and Beth. That was my dream. And then she got so sick. And it was like my whole world exploded. And you were just ripped out of my life. And I want you to be there. I mean, you're back now. And I just want you to be there for me, and I want to be there for you. Tonight of all nights, Peter, please. Please just be here for me.
Ugh.
I am a little sorry that you cut that clip before the aggressive crinkling of the vinyl jacket she's wearing. Completely ruins any compelling power the scene might have had. And actually, yeah. Jack Wagner is doing pretty well,
yeah.
Given that the writing has now changed the nature of their relationship on him for, I'm going to say, a fifth time, and also that she is a creepo.
Yeah. I mean, he's really just so fucked at this point because he's agreed to keep the secret. And now it's like 12 secrets. And there's no extricating himself because she's so unpredictable and God only knows what else She's gotten her quiver, but Peter, defeated as usual, hugs her and says he is there, but he has to go home now. Mm-hmm. And
get a paper route so that he can pay back her husband, who just totally scammed him at golf.
Well, speaking of which, at home the next morning, the McBrides bicker about Sydney and Peter. Kyle brags about beating Peter at golf the previous day, and Taylor is appalled that Kyle would do that to her special guy and insists that he return the money, but a remorseless Kyle refuses. So then Taylor says Sydney can work at the restaurant if Kyle gives the money back, which she already is working there, I thought, but Kyle backs down and stomps out. And unfortunately, as he is on his way to return it, Amanda crosses his path and breezily reminds him that his rent is due. So Kyle just endorses Peter's check to cover that month's rent and the next, explaining how he got it. And around this time, the next year, we were paying a bit more than that in a much less desirable part of LA. So this number is low, but it's not wildly low, $750 mm-hmm. a month for an apartment there. And then he stomps further into the complex. Like, they're going the opposite ways. Amanda's leaving. So I don't know where he is going, to Jake's garage in the back to do some sketches for Jane. Don't know. Anyway, even more unfortunately, this is when Peter comes down with his golf clubs, reminding himself to be the ball. And Amanda shoves the check at him and says his loss cost her 2 months' rent. Peter mumbles that he will make it back. Amanda gets that being a golf bum is Peter's fantasy, but it is a nightmare for her and it has to stop. Peter dares her to throw him out, but she throws his fantasy out instead, dropping his clubs in the pool and leaving. And she is a queen forever. God bless. Mm-hmm. Fuck golf. The end.
And Jack Wagner is not acting. That is genuine dismay.
Yeah, he's mad.
Yeah.
All right, let's close things up by naming our episode MVP.
The Checking Account Association of America. Really, really getting a lot of play for big check.
Antique banking. Yeah. I'm going to say Tom, because as long as he doesn't look into anything, this is going to be the easiest insurance policy he ever sold.
For sure. That, like, very low maintenance also.
That's right. Least valuable player.
Craig.
Yeah, Craig is pretty bad. I'm going to say Dan, because he's a creep. He's a creep also, just not the creepiest creep, but a creep. Let's give him his due.
Yeah, let's. Next time on Again With This, Peter needs a therapist, Samantha needs the art division of Interpol, Sherry and Jane need to get with the lazy Christmas program already, and you'll need an espresso and a cold compress to get through our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. And don't be chauvinistic. Follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and visit our Patreon page. There's a ton of extra 90210 and Melrose content there, including our monthly recaps of the 90210 MG podcast just for our subscribers at the $5 level and up. You'll find all of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm obscure filial black male Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host doesn't appreciate getting pulled out of rounds for this, and she's Tara Ariano. You can find her on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is not going to yell. Talk to you next time.